Wherever cancer is, Hancock Health will fight. In any part of you and in all corners of East Central Indiana. From Indianapolis to Greenfield, to Knightstown to Greensburg. From hospital rooms to family rooms, we fight. With technology and medicine. With care backed by the wisdom of Mayo Clinic. For you, for your family, and for your future in Decatur County. We fight cancer here. HancockHealth.org/cancer.
Good morning. It is April 25th, 5 minutes after 11. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So it was a rally that began around 7:30 this morning at Tarkington Park. And about half hour later, protesters ventured out onto Meridian Street just south of the park, and they started blocking intersections. And that forced police to close Meridian between 46th and 49th Streets. Around 9 p.m. this morning, about a dozen protesters with signs and banners, they walked out onto Meridian, but then police came and they arrested 14 of those people this morning for obstructing traffic. And some of the individuals that were arrested were not even Indianapolis residents. So I guess the question we're left with is, will Ryan Mears end up prosecuting any of these people who've been arrested?
Casey, and you and your drugs, you're so funny. You can't even get people prosecuted who murder people in this city. You think they're going to prosecute people for protest? I mean, look, here's the deal with all of this. These people do this because they think they can get away with it. Mm-hmm. They think they do it because they think the laws don't apply to them. And the reality of all of this is that in all likelihood, they'll be proven correct. I mean, look at the Summer of Love in 2020 and look at what took place there and look at how those people largely skated out scot-free. In the case of someone like Malik Muhammad, not only was he not punished, he was rewarded. He was given a VIP meet and greet with the governor after doing much the same of what these people did, except he, of course, took it to a new level where he was threatening to storm the governor's mansion on live TV. At least people got arrested this time, unlike the last time. So, people behave in a manner of what they believe that they can get away with, and that's the long of it, that's the short of it, and that's all of it. And these people are telling you, we clearly think we can get away with it.
Yeah, and if the prosecutor doesn't prosecute him, that just completely undermines the police chief, right? When there's no repercussions. So it's worth a slap on a wrist to them. If they think that their cause outweighs whatever minimal punishment there might be, they'll continue to do it.
Well, never forget that there was that guy in 2020, and obviously this was before you were here, there was a guy in 2020 who was one of these lunatics who is on camera, not like there's a picture of it. He's on video of a guy's minding his own business, driving under one of the bridges or whatever, and the overpass interstate, and obeying all applicable laws and just driving his truck. And this guy decides, I don't want this guy passing, and he pulls a gun on him. And it's in real time. The guy points the gun at the guy's window, and the guy goes, okay, well, if you don't want me to drive forward, I'll just drive around. Tries to drive around. The guy runs, sprints, puts the gun, points the gun back in the guy's, right on the windshield of the truck. Everybody knew who this guy was. They found him. He was all over the internet. Everybody knew what he was. Nobody pursued charges on that. He was on camera, Casey, on camera doing it. Everybody knew who the guy was. Within a day, everybody found him and said, this is the guy. Nothing happened. We have such a culture of lawlessness in this city. And if you're just going to be, these people obviously have no regard for other people. I mean, you or I would be mortified if you're like, you're preventing people from driving down the street. Like, that's, you and I would be like, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed of my behavior. These people have no shame. And if they can get away with it, they're going to take every liberty they possibly can with whatever they think they can get away with.
It is Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. And how about the FBI director coming out with that warning about a possible terror attack on U.S. soil? He said it could be similar to the Russian concert hall massacre, which left 144 people dead.
Our most immediate concern has been that individuals or small groups will draw some kind of twisted inspiration from the events in the Middle East to carry out attacks here at home. But now, increasingly concerning, is the potential for a coordinated attack here in the homeland, akin to the ISIS-K attack we saw at the Russia concert hall just a couple weeks ago.
No surprise there. When you have no idea who is here and how many have crossed over the border and what they're up to and what their intentions are, it seems pretty reasonable to be concerned. Right now, the FBI has over 4,000 international terrorism investigations open.
Well, you just hit the nail on the head, Casey, which is we have no idea who's in this country right now. There's something like 9 million people have illegally entered the country since the start of the Biden presidency. And many of these people who get caught just simply get released and are told, hey, you be on your best behavior and you be back here on such and such a day for your court date 2 years from now.
We're going to trust you to do the right thing.
Oh, the illegal immigrant didn't show up when we told him to. Mm-hmm. What a shock. And so, I mean, you got people from China, you got people from Iran. I mean, it's not just people coming from, you know, Mexico or South American countries. I mean, you're talking people all over the world who have recognized we have a very porous southern border, which is open for business. And even if they catch you, there's a good chance you're going to be released out into the ether and just free to do as you would like to do.
Are you concerned at all about how much the FBI is very busy telling us about all the stuff that they can't protect us from?
Well, isn't that amazing?
Like, we know this stuff is going on. We're concerned about this, and good luck.
All right. Let's, we weren't going to do this, but this, you know, kind of came down and yesterday, and so I thought we really needed to get an update on this. There was a big ruling yesterday in the Delphi trial in regards to transparency and how people are going to be able to consume the play-by-play of what's happening there in Delphi, as the judge basically has put the kibosh on any sort of broadcast of the Delphi murder trial. And so when we come back, Donnie Burgess from the WIBC newsroom is going to join us, get us the latest on that and kind of what that means for how we're going to be able to consume information on the Delphi murder trial.
All right. He's going to join us next on 93 WIBC.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Well, it seems that the calls for transparency are falling on deaf ears. It is 15 after 11. You're with Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
Donnie Burgess from the WIBC newsroom joins us now. He has been covering this like no other. Of course, we're talking about the Delphi murder investigation and upcoming trial. And Donnie, you guys reported yesterday over at WIBC.com, once again, local media outlets that have tried to cover this case, air broadcasts of this case, have been shut down by this judge, Fran Gall. Kind of just, first of all, give us the latest on what the judge said and why.
Yeah, so Special Judge Fran Gall, she is overseeing this case and has been for a long time. And the big question has always been, what kind of access will you have when it comes to this case? Will you get to see it? Will you get to hear it as it happens? And so far, the answer to that question is going to be no. So yesterday, Judge Fran Gall went ahead and gave the denial to Channel 13, ABC 57 up in South Bend, and the News Media Coalition, which is made
Coalition.
Up, yeah, which is apparently made up, I believe, of Channel 59 and 4. She went ahead and denied Wish TV last week, and so... So far, it has been a big no can do when it comes to...
I like that there's a coalition. It's like the United Nations of broadcasters getting together. And, okay, so why? What is the harm in letting the public know what's going on day by day in real time of arguably maybe the most important criminal case in the history of the state?
I mean, there's two different trains of thought here. Her staff has told me, when I talk to them, that she has a concern about putting jury and witnesses on camera, or, you know, broadcasting their presence live. And there's also apparently a logistical concern about how small the Carroll County Courthouse is. We just can't get everybody in there, right?
Okay, why the concern about putting the witnesses on camera?
Just
is
because
that a safety concern?
Yeah, because of how you know, lack of a better term, how crazy the case has been. Not only is this involving arguably the most notorious murder in Indiana's history, but all the things that have happened in this case since then, the evidence leak, which led to a man taking his own life last fall, and the you know, just the threats against different people, you know, That's the one train of thought there. The protect the jury, protect witnesses, right? But then there's the other people who think, you know what? This just, the judge will do what, she will do things that will benefit her.
Yeah.
Well, there's that train of thought.
Well, and you've covered this from day one. You've been all over this. I know the whole time you've been here at WIBC, Donnie Burgess from the WIBC newsroom is our guest. And that's, I think, where I'm at, Casey, is, and you and I have talked offline about this quite a bit. Everything about this case, it seems like they've gone out of their way to be transparent. And when you read, and who knows, look, the attorneys, their obligation is to defend their client. But when you read the things that are alleged about from the police to the prosecutor and now the judge, you'd think you'd err on the side of let's go overboard to be transparent with this so that if indeed this guy is convicted, everybody will go, man, he had every break that went his way and he totally did it and it was just a slam dunk case against him. You'd think you'd want the public to have that sense of assurity that everything was on the up and up with this.
Yeah, and if you're the judge, you would like to clear up a lot of concerns because the only hearing that has been broadcast, that media is allowed, bring your cameras, do your thing. The only one she's allowed was October 19th of last year. And that's the one where she surprised the defense by saying either you step down or I will disqualify you from the case when we go out there in front of the public and news media. That's the only one she's ever allowed. And that whole situation backfired when the state Supreme Court had to step in and say, Judge, you went about this the wrong way. These men need to be back on the case. Let's get this to trial.
Now, have you been told specifically no cameras, like including your cell phone? Because you could FaceTime live this.
Yeah. Or
was there a no electronics allowed?
Pretty much no electronics.
I understand no TV cameras because of room.
No,
even though most MMJs,
so what are you going to do?
Do
you
use their
throw
phone.
Your cell phone in a tub when you check in?
No, get this. This may operate like the last major hearing, which was March 18th. And if it does, that means reporters are to leave all electronics in their cars, and we go in with pad and pen, and you find out what happened in the courtroom about 12 hours later.
When you can go get to your phone.
This was like when I was a kid, and I used to, my dad used to tape the Cubs games, and I was banned from watching them until he got home from school, and we had to watch
everybody
it on
else
VHS.
Knew what was
yes!
Going, yeah.
This is ridiculous.
And here's the thing. On March 18th, when that happened, there were so many inaccurate reports and details and things that leaked throughout the day that were lost in translation or messed up, and that's what's going to happen.
Well, and that's the thing. When you can record something, you can go back and get an accurate quote. If you're just scribbling down with your pen and paper, you might miss something.
And here's the thing. Like, if you're... The Brian Koberger case, the man charged with
Idaho, right?
Yeah, killing four students. That court is going to stream the case live themselves, which courthouses can do. They can take initiative and do things. There's a million options to open up transparency here. And so far, it's none of the above.
What would be the harm? Donnie Burgess from the WIBC newsroom is our guest. He's got a new report out, WIBC.com, about the judge denying more media access to the Delphi murder trials that are coming up. What would be the harm, Donnie, of saying, okay, yeah, we recognize we don't want 9 cameras in here, or we don't want 90 cameras in here, but hey, we're going to have a feed, a single camera. Mm-hmm. We're going to position it, even if it's just right on the judge, so that everybody knows what she looks like. And so you wouldn't see the jury. It's not panning around. It's not showing witnesses. But you'll be able to pick up the audio, and we'll have a still camera. And everybody just, you all respectively lift off that feed. I mean, that's why it's just like her reasoning in many cases seems to fall flat to me, because there's a million different ways you could accomplish what she claims to accomplish and still let people know what's going on.
Well, it's funny you use the word reasoning, because every single one of the denials have come with no explanation, period.
Oh, really?
No.
There's not some big lengthy rigmarole.
What I said earlier about her feelings about protecting the jury and witnesses, that came from her court staff that I talked to on the phone. She has said nothing. So and when you ask what's the harm, I don't know. They could totally take control of this, you know, bring in a guy. I mean, Indiana is filled to the brim from state line to state line of media professionals.
Yeah.
And get this, when it comes to Indiana law now allowing cameras in the courtroom, when they were going through the pilot program to make sure, okay, is this something we really want to do? Judge Fran Gall was a part of that pilot program.
Oh, wow.
So she's going against her own opinion.
So, now, here we are.
Okay, so jury selection begins what, May?
May 13th.
Okay, is there still time to debate this, or is this issue
There could,
done?
You know, as long as there is still time and opportunity from now in between then, mm-hmm. anything could happen. You know, so there could be some sort of decision made. A lot of media outlets, and this is normal for anything across the United States, a lot of media outlets could get together, and Indiana's very strong on this with the Indiana Broadcasters Association and things like that. They could get together and file some sort of suit or challenge this and try to get access, so anything could happen.
So literally, if this holds up, you're going to have to go to Carroll County
mm-hmm.
each day, or you're going to have to stay there or whatever. And you're going to just have a notepad, and then what? At 4 o'clock, you're going to just run out to your car and call in a report about what? I mean, this is insane. Yeah. It is 2024, and we are treating it like it's 1824.
Mm-hmm. I will be there in Carroll County for the entire trial. And my plan right now is to take really good notes. I'm going to tap into my long lost, rusty student skills. And. Put together some notes, run out to the car, and start calling in reports.
Do you expect that you'll be given breaks throughout the day? And you'll be able to get to your car and maybe file some reports?
Well, that's the thing. I'm pretty sure they will allow like a lunch break or something. But like when it's time to get back there, you got to get back there. And these hearings for Delphi have been packed. People have been lining up 3-4 hours in advance.
Oh, my goodness.
So there probably won't be any time to run back and,
gotta
do that.
You got to get a fedora and a trench coat.
Oh, yeah. I've got to get a hat.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you got to get
one. Put the pencil in the cap.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. This is I mean, and look, you're great at being fair, and I kind of know some of your opinions on this, but you never give them on air. But I'll tell you what, from a media perspective, you guys got to be looking at this like, this is crazy.
It's look, opinion time here. It is crazy, but there is still room to do great journalism here.
Yeah.
Even though there is a restriction in place, there's still room to do our job to the best of the ability that we have provided here. And that's exactly what we're going to do.
I told Donnie, I said, this is Donnie's opportunity to become like Greta Van Susteren. Mm-hmm. Remember, she was just kind of some no-name attorney who then ended up on CNN each night because she was at the OJ trial. Donnie could end up, mm-hmm. because he is so good at reporting the news,
yeah.
and he's so fair and so balanced, he could end up, like, we could see him on Fox News as a superstar, and we'll say, I remember when. That is my goal for you, Donnie. Hat, fedora, trench coat, and to see you on national news reporting on Delphi.
I'm going to be at night in the background in the parking lot, like Deep Throat, in the garage. That's where I'm going to be.
Donnie Burgess, you're the best. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. It's Kendall and Casey. It's 93 WIBC. It's been a while since we made fun of your president, also known as your commander-in-chief, but I think we're due. So he was addressing union members yesterday at the Capitol, and he read something that he wasn't supposed to read on the teleprompter. Here we go.
Imagine what we can do next. 4 more years. Pause.
4 more years. 4 more years. 4 more years.
Yeah. So members of the North America's Building Trade Union, they were the ones that were shouting 4 more years. But
pause.
That's it. You heard it. But according to the White House transcript, what he said was inaudible.
Oh, well, they should have called us because I heard it very clear. Kev, would you like to play that again just to make sure we all heard him say pause?
Imagine what we can do next. 4 more years. Pause.
4 more years. Pause.
They should have started chanting 4 more years, pause, 4 more years, pause. This guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You
mean the guy who reads everything on the teleprompter? He's like Ron Burgundy?
I mean, it is. But it's like he does this. Mm-hmm. He uses words that aren't words. Mm-hmm. He puts words next to words that don't go together. He looks confused on stage. He tries to shake hands with people that aren't there. He calls for dead people to stand up and take a bow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what?
His
why
uncle,
is this okay?
His uncle was killed by cannibals?
Yes.
I mean, everything.
His grandfather was, an All-American football player?
Uh-huh.
He rode the Amtrak 9 million times. I mean, at what point are people just like,
he commuted on train across the Francis Scott Key Bridge that doesn't have railroad tracks. Everything.
I just can't. And that's what I can, Casey. I just can't, and that's what I can.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make sure that everybody heard it and had the chance to hear him read the teleprompter. Pause. Even when it's not there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I wanted to play this longer clip. I know that you haven't heard it, so...
How do you know I haven't heard it?
Oh, I didn't think you had heard it.
You give me no...
Have you heard it?
What is it?
It's the one from Scott Galloway.
Who's Scott Galloway?
He was on MSNBC.
Oh! Is that going to make me mad?
And I don't think it'll make
it's on MSNBC.
Mad. Right. And that's kind of the shocking part about it. He was talking about the challenges that are facing young people today, and he really wasn't pulling any punches.
Oh.
And he pretty much is accusing older generations of failing today's youth. And he said it's the first time in our nation's history that young people aren't doing better than their parents. Here we go.
For the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old man or woman isn't doing as well as his or her parents were at 30. That is the social compact breaking down. People aged 30 to 34, 60% of them in 1990 had one child. Now it's 27%. People are opting out of America. They're not optimistic about it. They're not having kids. Young people aren't having sex. They're not meeting. They're not mating. The pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks every day, which lessens household formation. So we have a real issue. Young people are enraged. So it turns every cut, every movement into an opportunistic infection because, quite frankly, they are just pissed off. They look up, they see wealth, exceptional wealth across my generation and people in certain industries. And they are really struggling. Their purchasing power is going down. And the incumbents create artificial scarcity on campus. We take pride in rejecting 90% of our applicants. So the incumbents who already have a degree see their degree go up in value. We get very concerned with housing and traffic once we own a housing. Housing permits are sequestered from young people. Housing prices have gone from 290 to 420 in the last 4 years. So a young person, a house, stocks that I don't own, skyrocket in value. Let's have COVID relief and flush the markets and take assets way up because if a million people dying would be bad, would be tragic if I got less wealthy. And we're doing it on their credit card. Young people have every reason to be enraged, and every issue they see, they look up, they get angry, and they see someone doing better than them. And then every day it is speedballed in their face that they are failing, that they are not doing as well as everyone around them. We have lost the script. Our kids are more anxious and more depressed and more obese and more addicted. And we have made a purposeful decision to let this happen by ensuring the people around this table stay wealthy at the cost of young people.
So he had a lot to say there.
It's really hard to argue with anything he said. There are a couple things.
You know,
Matt Hiblin, our boss, and I had this conversation, and we've had this many, many times over the years. The things he's describing are why people turn against capitalism. And it's not capitalism's problem. In fact, it's the crony capitalism that is creating this. Pure capitalism, it's not. It's like this guy's spelling out. What happened during COVID? The government intervened and started picking all these winners and losers.
Mm-hmm.
You got $600. And then this mega corporation got $5 million, right? And so you had governments getting all of this money. You know, governments were the one thing that never got hurt during COVID. You got crushed. Businesses, small businesses got crushed. Governments, they made out great. Tom Brady made out great. You know, all of these rich people got all of this money and regular people got crushed. And so what it makes it do, what happens though, is then people who don't have an actual verse or standing of what's going on here, they turn against the whole thing altogether rather than recognizing, no, it's government that is the problem. The government picking the winners and losers, that's the problem. But ultimately, all this comes back to us because government doesn't happen in a vacuum. There isn't a government seed that's planted in the backyard. We vote for these people. Let's bring it close to home. Mike Braun voted to print $2 trillion at the beginning of COVID. We were screaming about that at the time. That's the worst thing you could possibly do. His excuse now? Well, everybody else did it too.
Mm-hmm.
But yet Mike Braun, who printed $2 trillion during COVID, who voted for 40 plus tax increases, including the largest tax increase in the history of the state as a state legislator in 2017, he's the overwhelming front runner to become the governor of the state of Indiana. So why would you vote for someone whose whole elective life is about making piss poor decisions and doing the wrong thing and raising taxes and growing government. But yet people will vote for Mike Braun and then they'll complain when that happens. We are to blame for this. That guy is right. We, the adults, are to blame for this because we keep voting for people who keep doing the stuff.
Right. And you keep voting for more wasteful spending, and that just keeps inflating everything, making it harder for these young people to get a start, let alone get ahead.
Todd Young voted to print $90-plus billion to go to foreign governments, much of it to governments that don't even like us. We sat here and screamed at people to not vote for that guy in 2022. Yet overwhelmingly, the same people now who are livid about it because he's been stabbing them in the back since the moment he got reelected. You can't vote for these people. This is why I said every single one of these incumbents, whether it's Bookwalter or Baird, who's got a challenger in Charles Bookwalter, or it's any of these state house incumbents who are running for, you have to vote all of them out because they've all screwed you at the state level, the federal level, the local level, time and time and time again. The overwhelming majority of these people have taken great pride and with great arrogance stabbing a knife in your back and watching you bleed out. Now, you get to decide this spring in these primaries, what are you going to do about it? Who are you going to vote for? If you vote for the people that have done this, they'll keep doing it. We have, this is the most frustrating thing about all this, Casey. We have the control to stop all of this tomorrow, and we choose not to do it.
He also goes on when he was talking about that we've lost the script, the kids are more anxious and more depressed and more obese and more addicted. I think now that doesn't have as much to do with the money issue as it does priorities and focusing on, you know, there's so much, you go to a doctor now and so many times the answer is, well, here's more pills, take more pills. What is in our food? Everything is so heavily processed now, and it's the way we're managing a lot of these situations as well, especially when it comes to the obesity and to the addiction. You know, hey, how about go take a walk and clear your mind, work up a sweat? I know that's not a complete answer, but when you keep relying on these big pharma to solve all the problems and people aren't eating properly, that's going to all pour into some of this issue.
People don't parent anymore.
Well, and that's part of it. You know, the moral compass of closeness with your parents.
I had a conversation over the weekend at the golf course with a guy who, he was one of my high school teachers. He's still a high school teacher. He's a universally respected, very moderate, you know, great dude, taught economics. And we had this conversation. And he is at the tail end of his teaching career. And we had a very long conversation because he sure knows my views on public education and my opinion about it. And we had this conversation where you can only look, and the public education system is right, should be rightfully criticized for a whole bunch of things. But ultimately, it rests on parenting and a lack of parenting on why kids are behaving the way they're behaving and the way they're going out into the world and the things that they're doing. It all starts at home. It all starts with a lack of involvement in many cases in their people's lack of involvement in their kids' lives. Look, my wife and I have made a decision that we are going to do everything in our power to keep our kid out of daycare. Now, I understand that everybody can do that, but we have made immense changes and sacrifices in our lives, financially and otherwise, to ensure that happens. Why? That way someone who my kid trusts and knows is watching after my kid 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's either me, it's either my wife, it's her grandparents. That's it. That's who watches my kid. So she will learn what she needs to learn. She will interact the way she needs to learn to interact. And we will be involved parents until the day she flies the coop and goes out on her own. That's a sacrifice. But that's what needs to happen in order to fix a bunch of this crap, is people need to stop prioritizing themselves and material things and put their kids first and get involved in their kids' existence. And this is the conversation I had with this teacher, which is the public education system can only do so much. Even if you had the best teachers in the whole world, if you don't have, and this guy acknowledged there's a lot of teachers who are making teachers look bad. And he said, yes, absolutely. That's 100% true. But unless you have people who are willing to be involved in their kids' lives and teach them right from wrong and teach them how to behave and teach them how to learn, this crap isn't going to change, Casey.
Abdul's going to join us next.
We're going to get into that train wreck of a debate. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about kind of some of these contested congressional races. We got a whole bunch of stuff to get into, Casey.
It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Once upon a time, you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you...
Oh, my goodness, look who it is. What a better way to close the show. I can't think of one. 93 WIBC, it is the Kendall and Casey Show. I'm Rob Casey. He's here. He's an author. He's a broadcaster. He's the owner and operator of IndiePolitics.org. Abdul Akib Shabazz, hello.
Or you can call me unindicted co-conspirator number one.
Well, I'd call you a bunch of things, and that might be one of them someday. Hey, so you...
What do you mean someday? You mean like tomorrow?
You've moderated things before. You, in fact, did a panel just last night, the Congress race up in the 5th Congressional District.
Yes. It was the 5th Congressional District up at the Kokomo, Howard County, GOP Lincoln Day. All the candidates were there, Victoria Spartz, Chuck Goodridge, Raju Chandala, and then a cast of other people, Mark Hurt, and some other folks I've never heard of.
So my point on all this is you have done these forums before. I think you did a U.S. Senate race, the primary in 2018. Yeah. You've done this one. And you have managed to do numerous ones of these without being universally panned, without making yourself the star of the event, without everyone establishing.
Well, the exception of the 2018 event, in a gubernatorial debate and in a U.S. Senate debate, I did not make myself the star. It was Todd Rokita who made me the star of the debate. By the way, thank you, Todd. I appreciate that.
But you did everything in your power to say, and I think you even said at the beginning of the debate,
the moderator is not on the ballot.
Now, this John Schwannis guy, he apparently didn't get that memo at the governor's debate last night. As someone who has effectively moderated debates and panels, you had to be beside yourself.
As I sat there and I just sort of watched the whole thing, all I could say was WTF. And I didn't use the initial.
Yeah.
I said that over and over and over again, whether it was John Schwannis, sort of the raise your hand, the weird questions, the back and forth, and then I found out there was a lot of things that the debate commission didn't do this time around that they did in the past. So as I sat there and I watched, like, what the hell am I looking at here? I'm going back to watching Shameless on Netflix.
I was told that at the end of the debate there would not be closing statements or closing pitch by the candidates, but then there was one. Did he, you think, just make changes on the fly?
I think there was miscommunication between the moderator, the debate commission, and the panel. Because normally, because with the ground rules, you know, minute for opening statement, mm-hmm. minute for answer, minute for closing statement, is this what we all agree to? Or if we didn't tell the panel you're going to have a closing statement, then somebody should have told that to the moderator, that, hey, we're not going to have a close. Now, please note, when you're moderating these things, you got a bunch of stuff going on in your head, trying to make sure you got your questions right, trying to get through all the candidates, you're trying to keep the order straight. So what I would do is when I would moderate a debate, I'd like, okay, here's a question I'm going to ask. Here's the order I'm going to ask. Here's who I'm going to ask the question so I can check them off and move forward. That, you do a lot of prep work.
He appeared not to know any of this, like what order, whose turn was it? And then he's literally reading Mike Braun talking points at one point, I think it seemed like on more than one occasion he was reading Braun.
And that I would not have done. If you're not here, then guess what? You're not here, then that'll be for the voters to decide. But I'm not going to be your proxy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be your Huckleberry or any of that stuff. If you're not here, I'll say Mike Braun couldn't be here because of the U.S. Senate, and then I just leave it at that.
Yeah, and he sort of made Braun the big winner because, well, with Schwannis being the loser and the thing everybody's talking about, nobody's talking about any of the answers these candidates gave because it's what a train wreck this moderator was. So Braun kind of became the de facto winner.
He was. I will argue there were technically two winners. Technically Braun because de facto winner, in air quotes, because Braun wasn't there. But also give Suzanne Crouch credit because Suzanne basically kept her composure the whole time, stayed on the points, didn't get distracted by all the stuff that was going on the other end, watching Curtis Hill and John Schwannis almost get into a fight.
Mm-hmm. You got to give her credit. She can get 9 talking points in every answer. No matter what the question is, she can weave 9 talking points into a 30-second answer. That is indeed an accomplishment, Casey.
Well, I think that Abdul hit it on the head when you said being prepared for it. And that was the vibe that I was getting, that he was not prepared. I felt that I had been more prepared for the Rittenhour-Kendall debate here on WIBC. Do you think that's what it came down to?
I think that was part of it. Also, I think there was an issue with the debate commission and communication, not only with the moderator, with the panel, but also with us.
Yeah.
For example, we usually run the debates on Network Indiana, but up until like the day before, they didn't provide us with the satellite information. Okay, here's how you log in. Here's how you run the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they finally got it done, but that tells me, and the debate commission's done a really good job in the past. Everybody's entitled to one. Everybody gets one mulligan. Me, this was their mulligan. If they do this in the general election, then there's going to be some major changes.
Because we had Pete Seed on earlier, and he's one of you. He's Mr. Establishment, so you can't say this is us just running the radical right wingers out there. He said get rid of the debate commission. He's done with them. You think it's too fast to pull the plug on the debate commission?
Yeah, I say everybody gets a mulligan. Give them one more shot. If they screw up November, then that's it.
Abdul is here, and we kicked off the interview talking about how you moderated that congressional forum last night, 5th Congressional District. It was up in Kokomo. It really is a two-person race up there, right? It's Spartz, and it's Goodrich, and the Raju jingle is kind of funny, and everybody talked about it, but it's a two-person race.
Yeah, for the most part, it's between Victoria Spartz and Chuck Goodrich.
China Chuck.
Yeah, whatever. And one question I did ask, them, is, and it was at the end of the debate, because I always kind of throw in, I throw in two questions. Number one, my marijuana question, which I always got to throw
in. Talk about going into business for yourself.
just for giggles. But I also asked, if you were not a candidate on the stage, who would you vote for?
Yeah.
Which is always kind of gets them to think about it a little bit. And the winner out of the 8 candidates, Victoria Spartz got like 4
That's
of the 5
interesting.
Votes out of all of them. Mm-hmm. Max England got 1. And a couple other people, but Victoria, actually, she won.
Yeah.
She won that.
Speaking of congressional races, the 6th race, 6th district is super interesting because you've got Shreve and Speedy, two mortally flawed people. Speedy, based on the spending and all the tax increases. Shreve, it's the gun stuff. Shreve's running now a bunch of ads against Speedy that I think are super effective. He's got one mocking him on how everything he's doing with his gun is wrong on his ad on guns, which is great. You think Shreve can win despite the complete implosion he had as a mayoral candidate?
Yes, because he's got the money to stay. He's got the money to stay on air, get his message out, attack his opponents, and his opponents don't have the resources to go after Jefferson Shreve, at least not on television.
Because there's too many. There's too many people you're running against.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Any idea how much money he's put into that campaign?
Oh, gosh. $6-7 million, I think so.
More than we've got, Casey.
Yeah.
More than we've got.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, if I had that kind of money, I would not be running for public office. I'd be out buying politicians is what I'd be doing.
Hey, there's about, 10 days left to go in the governor's race. This is Braun's, right? Nobody's gonna beat Braun.
I would say right now the wind is at Braun's back, but that gust of wind is getting slower and slower and slower and less
power. Why do you say that?
Just looking at Braun's polling numbers. He was 47 back in November. He was 33 in our poll, 33 in the Fox 59 poll. And I've been told his numbers are continuing to drop. And this is even before all the negative ads and negative campaigning.
And that's what needs to happen. He needs to kind of make a mistake, and somebody else needs to have a win.
Well, somebody needs to figure out how to capitalize on those undecided voters, because even though Braun's numbers are dropping, the undecided voters aren't really... You got so many people in the race, they're sort of divvying up all the undecided vote. So if my thing is, if you're a candidate at this point in the game, you should be talking to undecided voters. Hi, I'm Brad Chambers. I'm Suzanne Crouch. I'm Mike Braun. If you're undecided in this race, let me help you out. Let me help give you some reasons why you should vote.
Let me help you out. I like that. If I ever run for office again, Casey, I'm going to steal that. Let me help you out. Mm-hmm. I like that.
I envy your ability to envy me.
Hey, what are you doing this weekend?
Actually, doing a radio show, believe it or not.
Hey, congratulations. Who are you talking to?
Lots of candidates. We're talking to Chuck Goodrich, also talking to a couple other candidates for public office. We're looking at the race to actually replace Mike Speedy.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually a contested.
Oh, yeah.
Contested race down there.
Yeah, all right. Find him Saturdays, 1 to 3, Abdul at Large here on WIBC, also indiepolitics.org. Abdul, you're the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for us today. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Kevin. And thank you for listening. It is Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.